Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 22nd, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on planet Earth. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Speaking of planet Earth, we have a world champion, don't we, buddy?
Shouldn't we always speak about the planet Earth?
Yeah.
It's the one resource that we're always going to have, unless we ruin it, pass it on to our children, even though I don't have children to pass it on to.
Man, what a downer.
Yeah, you brought it up.
I know, but I didn't talk about ruining the only resource we have. And
no, I'm telling people not to ruin it. So it's a positive thing. I don't know how to go negative on me.
I was all positive. We have a world champion. Very exciting. They're like, unless we ruin the planet for generations to come. Thanks a lot.
Oh, man. Ah, you're right. You're right. We have a world champion, so we will celebrate that.
Yes.
Gusto Alvarez, Avalos. I knew I was going to screw it up. I got the first name right.
That's how it's pronounced? Gusto?
Gusto,
wow.
Alvarez. Yes, is our 2014 world champion. Obviously, you guys know that we recorded last week's show way early. We're still at Thunder Valley. So hopefully you tuned into the live stream that was poolside at the final table and watched it. Very good poker being played, too. And I got to say, Gusto is a great world champion for us. A little quiet guy at the table. He had his entire family there. Literally, like, his daughter was there, his mom, his dad, grandparents, aunts, and uncles. And they were there at the very beginning when it was 6 o'clock and, like, 190 degrees out there by the pool. And they were there shortly after midnight when he won. It was just a really great story because, you know, you never like to pick favorites at these things, right? You just because everybody has a good story at the final.
Yeah.
But I kept watching the whole family there. No one else had that level of support on site. And, you know, everybody had like their wife or girlfriend and maybe a couple other friends cheering him on. But he had this huge family plus a bunch of his poker buddies there were watching him. And I just kept thinking, you know, hey, if this guy wins, this is going to be a really good story because these folks have been sitting there watching poker for 6 hours. And I don't know if you've ever watched poker. Chris,
nah,
ever?
Nah, never.
But it could be pretty boring for 6 hours, right? They were there from the beginning to the end, and it was just such a great moment. And then when he won, and then, you know, so quiet at the table that you couldn't really get a good read on who he was, right? And he had never played, never had to cash anywhere near this big in his life. Ended up winning 91,000 or something from this. Biggest tournament he entered before was the Heartland, which is the same buy-in, and finished 70th or something in that. So, yeah, like no, nothing on Hendon Mom. No, nobody had written up anything about him. So, the whole tournament, whole final table, he was fairly an unknown. But you kept watching this family, watching him. I'm like, you know, that's the story I want to write. I want to write about, you know, his family just hanging out, watching him, and taking care of him. Of him the entire tournament, and it turns out he ended up winning. He came to the final table as the chip leader, and that's hard to do too.
Yep. You know,
I'd like to see some statistics on that, on coming to the final table with the chip leader and actually winning, because anecdotally it seems like it never happens, right?
Yep.
But he held tight, played, he made some really good laydowns, the interview with him afterwards that we did with the Hold'em Radio guys, who were terrific as always. Out there supporting the event, you know, he talked about how, you know, hey, I just don't want to give these people chips, you know, I'm going to make them fight to get these chips from me, and exactly what he did. There were some lots of all-ins from three-handed where I thought he could just take a player out, and, you know, if he had, like, you know, the queen seven, as we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago, the computer hand,
yeah,
it very easily be justified of making that call and flipping, and he didn't make those calls with anything like that. And it worked out for him. He ended up winning the thing. So congratulations to Gust.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. What I wanted to know about him was when he won a hand or something, did he like go to his family, or does he feel like obligated to keep them entertained? You know, I mean, that's a long time to be out there watching poker. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, no. Again, he was super polite and calm. He had his little sunglasses on and his hat, and you know, probably the best he did was flash a smile every once in a while when he won a pot or knocked a player out. And it's funny, his family is coming up to him every once in a while and tap him on the shoulder. Hey, you want something to drink? And he's like, yeah, I'll take a water. And they run to the bar, agua, agua. and they come back with a Coke instead. Oh, thank you. But no, I mean, yeah, it was obviously, you could tell, it was artist for the family to sit there and watch, because obviously his poker buddies are really into it and understood what was going on. But right. You could also tell the family members really didn't understand poker.
They're just there to support him, yeah.
Right, so they're just sitting there. And like I said, for the first hour or so of this thing, it was pretty hot. We learned that next year we'll start the final table at 7 o'clock. And it was gorgeous from 7 o'clock on. It was like the best weather you could ever imagine. A nice light breeze, and the pool was lit up out there. And it was really comfortable from that time on. But the first hour was admittedly fairly brutal. And they sat through that, and then obviously they sat through five more hours of, you know, raise and take it's things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't say that they certainly didn't have a gusto penance and were, you know, jumping up and down and screaming at every pod, but they were involved and watched it. And it really ended up being a really good story, I thought.
That's so cool.
And then, like I said, we did this pool side. I think we learned a lot. And one of the new things they did this year, obviously, they brought our friends from Hold'em Radio out. Normally, Ben does the hosting of the live stream himself, and really it's just more announcing rather than commentary, right?
Yeah.
Occasionally has some folks like our ambassador, Garrett Roth, or if I'm out there, you know, step in and help a little bit from time to time. But the Hold'em Radio guys were out there this year, and they were able to splice their audio into the live stream video, and really Ben was calling the action at the table, and then the Hold'em Radio guys and I popped in there every once in a while were actually doing commentary and interviews during it. So it really ended up being a much better live stream than we expected it to be. Some technical issues at the front end, so those of you that out there that tuned in right at the start, one, I appreciate it, and two, I'm sorry. but I think we worked through that, and I know we're already talking to Ben, the director of poker out there, just phenomenal guy, that he's really committed to making this live stream even better next year and beefing it up with some more people, bring the Hold'em Radio guys back, and really make it really interesting. But all that stuff, I keep forgetting to say, I mean, it really was. It was poolside, and it went flawless. I mean, other than the heat at the beginning, no rain, the wind was, there's no wind, cards weren't flying all over the place. I mean, everything you could think of that would have been terrible for this didn't happen. And I'm really, really stoked to do it next year and the year after that. So very happy to admit that we're still in contract right now, but all of us are admitting it on both sides, or announcing it on both sides. We will be back at Thunder Valley, not only for the 2015 Antiope World Championship, but also the 2016 World Championship. Obviously, we'll be back there in November for our Antiope NorCal Classic this year, and we will also be back in the next 2 years for the NorCal Classic, and those will both be championship events with the winners appearing on the cover of the magazine. So this is a really great relationship that we forged with Thunder Valley out there, and I think the people that came out and played really, really enjoyed it. There's people that specifically came down just for the event, and they really gushed about Ben and I about how the event went. So I certainly was all smiles in the plane ride home, and I know everybody at Thunder Valley enjoyed it as well too. So hopefully a lot more of our listeners will show up these next 2 years, because we're going to be there.
That's awesome. Well, on the other end of the spectrum, I was in the Wethersfield Donk Festival. Wethersfield, Connecticut. That's what.
Was there a live stream for that?
There was a live stream. All my money coming out of my wallet and everyone else's. It was streaming.
All right. So right now, I'm gonna call shenanigans on this. All right.
Okay.
If money is gonna stream out of your wallet into a home game economy, yeah, it really should be our home game. It shouldn't be these people that you see once a year.
I know, for some reason I don't lose in our game, but I'm losing everyone else's.
Of course, that's not a statement at all on the quality of play of these two games, I'm sure.
Well, you know, every time I go back to Connecticut, I try to hook up with Jason and Ben, and this time I didn't know Eric was going to be there. Blazman was there. That was great. I pulled up in front of the house, and he's up on the porch talking with Ben. I'm like, holy cow, Blaz, I forgot you played in this home game. How's it going? So I knew four of the people in the home game. I mean, how, you know,
crazy.
Yeah, weird is that? You show up, and it's like, wow. And actually, it was a little sad because this is the last time I'm probably going to get a chance to play with Jason. He's moving out of the country.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah,
wow.
His wife and him, they got a big opportunity overseas. So I was glad I got to play with him one last time. And you never know, he may come back or whatever, but... you know, and I won't have a lot of opportunities to go back to.
Hey, if you keep dumping money in the home game, I know he's going to come back.
It wasn't an insult when I called it the Weathersfield Donk Festival. That's what he put on the. He had the timer program for the sit and go, and it was funny. I every time I go to this home game, I just have fun. It's like listening to these guys talk because they all know each other, and they only know me through like Annie Up and the cruises and stuff. So,
right.
I just sit back and listen to them having their conversations, and a lot of times I'm not even really paying attention to what I'm doing. But during a sit and go, and you know me, I don't play sit and goes. I don't really like to play tournaments, but I love playing in this one. It's like a $20 rebuy for the first four levels, and you know, I try to make the $20 last, and if not, I'm glad to rebuy. So, I pretty much played like one hand for the first two rounds. Didn't really do much, maybe two hands, and I was up a little bit, and I had pocket sevens. And I thought, oh, okay, well, here's a hand. And there's not a lot of aggression in this game, at least to start. So I was like, okay, I can limp and set mine and see what happens. And I limped, and I got a chance to see. And it may have been a small raise, but I don't think there was. I think it was just a limp pot. And flop came jack 10-7, three suits. And I was like, all right, as long as somebody doesn't have 8-9, I'm golden. And if they do have 8-9, I still have out. So I bet out, and Ben calls. And one of the guys that I wasn't familiar with raised, and I'm like, oh, this is sweet. So I go all in. I think he raised all in. I called the all in, and my all in would have put was less than the other guy's all in. So, and then Ben contemplates for a little while, and then he calls the all in. I'm like, what am I in third place here? I got a set, you know. top two for the first guy, I went all in. So I wanted the board to just stay the way it was.
Yeah.
If 8-9 wasn't out there. And Ben turns over king-queen. So
wow.
He just has two overs and a straight draw. And I'm like, oh, I'm golden. I'm going to triple up here if the board doesn't pair. And I'm going to take this thing down because they're paying like three spots. And there was only like eight of us because there's a bunch of rebuys. I'm going to make it, you know, some money. And this is great. You know, like the last two times I played, I cashed in there. Sit and goes too. I won the first one. So I'm like, I'm 100% cash record here. And 9 came on the turn. So I'm like, oh, now I have to have the board pair, but it can't be the jack of the 10. It has to be the 9 or the 7, make quads. And, of course, didn't. And then from then on, my night went downhill. And it's appropriate because Weathersfield is, like, up on a hill anyway. I mean, it's so weird going back from Florida and you drive all these hills and stuff. And, the GPS takes me, like, the back route, you know. So, I was so content. They just have fun with these guys, and it wasn't like, you know, we played for small stakes, you know, really low stakes, like half skittles, you know, that, you know, I was just having fun and calling instead of being aggressive. And you can ask anybody in that game, I was not aggressive at all, except for, you know, I was even like one guy, Jason's father, who I like, and he actually winters down here in St. Pete and plays at Derby Lane. We had a hand, and I had him, and I know I had him beat because he showed me his card by accident, and the whole table saw it. And I was like, you know what? I know you were going for a flush draw there, and you hit your pair on the end. My pair's bigger, but just show me your card. I feel bad. Just take the pot. And that's me. Can you believe that was me saying that? That's never happened. So I just had a lot of fun, but I lost a lot of money. You know, not a lot, but I mean, I lost. Then instead of winning, I'm so used to, you know, at least doing okay in those games. But it was great to see everybody, and I don't like playing the role of lovable loser, so I'm going to have to, next time I play in it, if I do, I'm going to have to be a little more.
You don't like to play the role of lovable anything.
That's
so
true.
Yeah, you had the loser in there, and I know it's really tough for you, so I'm glad you're a good sport about it now.
Yeah, but I had a blast, and it was really good seeing Blaz and Ben. Ben, I just saw a little while ago, he was on our cruise.
Right.
And again, you know, I hope Jason all the best, and if I get to see him again, that'll be great. But if not, I was glad I got to play with him one last time.
And while you're up there, I actually had a little tiny home game. What I think is funny is most of our home game guys sit around and wait for me to come up with schedule a home game at my house, and it's like once every 3 months now.
Yeah,
I've done so much, and even when I'm not, then I got to figure out, hey, should I be doing something else, right? So, well, we're not playing at my house as much as we used to, and I feel bad about that. But it was like Wednesday, and I literally just got off of the airplane from Dallas, and I was on the super shuttle. Thank you for being out of town, not being able to. I was on the super shuttle with seven old people just bitching about everything. It was misery, right? but Frankie, Dr. Frank, sends me a text. He's like, "Hey man, I've been playing this Open Face Chinese on the app for a long time, and I'm just jonesing to play live. Do you want to get together and play live sometime soon?" And I'm like, "You know what? I would love to do that." I'm like, "How about tomorrow night?" My wife was working late, and I'm like, "Come over and play." He's like, "Sure." So I'm like, "All right, well, I should get a couple more people at least." So our other home game friends, Andrew and Sarah, I knew they're usually pretty easy to get a hold of, so I sent them a text, and boom, in 5 minutes, I had a home game.
Wow.
And so we just played Open Face Chinese, but they came over, and we played about 5 hours or so. And I got to tell you, and I know you can relate to this, when you sit at a table and you know you're the best player by far, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, I would never say I'm the best poker player of these four, because these are four really good players. But admittedly, all three of these had just started playing Open Face. In fact, actually, I think Sarah, he was teaching them all to drive over.
Oh, jeez.
So I don't think I'm being arrogant at all in saying that I have logged more hours playing Open Face Chinese Pineapple than any of these three combined, probably, right?
It was Open Face Pineapple?
Yeah, Open Face Pineapple.
Oh,
that's what everybody plays now.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Plus, I have no idea. Old school now. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so it was funny because when I invited Andrew, he's like, "Oh, yeah, sure, you're calling the two fish to come over." And I'm like, "You know, hey, I don't know if we're going to play for anything. I might just play for fun. If we're going to play for anything, it'll be a quarter of a point or something. A quarter of a skittle for a point."
Yeah, a quarter of a skittle. Right?
And he's like, "All right." So we get there, and I'm like, "Hey, you know, let's do the quarter thing. Everybody put 20 skittles in the pot, and you know, no one's going to get hurt." Well, Scott got hurt. Scott, the big loser on the night. First the rebuy, and clawed a little bit back, but still the big loser on the night. And let me tell you just how lucky my opponents were this night. Because, you know, they set the hand. A lot of Open Face, whether it's Chinese and definitely Pineapple, it's all in how you set your first five cards.
Yeah.
If you're setting yourself up to build from there. And if you foul your hand, you're screwed. So you really got to think hard about how you're building your cards. And every time they would set their hands, all three of them, I'd be like, "Wow." And then we were just there having fun, right? So I'm like, you know, "Hey, do we want to talk strategy in the middle of the hand? Does anybody mind that?" "No, absolutely. We're here to learn, right?" So I was like, "Hey, you got to put a kicker on the bottom. What are you going to do with that?" So I'm giving them all these lessons all night, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every hand, they don't put the kicker on the bottom. Like, "All right, fine. You're not listening to me." Okay. And so the one time, this is how bad I was running. Andrew put it on the bottom, on his bottom, Jack 9 of hearts.
Okay.
Hits a straight flush.
Oh, no way.
The very next pull, he gets two hearts, the complete. So now he has a four to a straight flush and hits his eye. I don't even remember now. I'm sure just with the way that I went, it was the gutter. It wasn't even open-ended. Hits the straight flush, and I'm just looking there, and I'm like, you know, I kind of felt like, do you remember that that SNL skit where John Lovitz is Michael Dukakis?
I'm losing to this guy?
How am I losing to this guy? Exactly how I felt all night, but I'm having fun at their expense. I mean, it was really cool actually to sit around and play Open Face Chinese Pineapple with good friends for a night. But I just thought that was a fun story. So we'll see whether I can get another one of those games going, because I got to get some skills back from these folks.
That's so weird. I didn't think that you could actually pull off a home game of Open Face Chinese Pineapple. I mean, that's
so weird.
Well,
the good thing is you really only need three, because only three people can play at once. You know, I invited four over just because you have a dealer that can sit out, which I thought it might be fun for somebody to actually watch the game rather than play it. Because you learn a lot more when you're not actually in the hand and you're watching three other people and doing. So it's really not hard to put together four. It's more like our home game when we're trying to get, you know, eight people and all at one time. And, you know, because we only get four, it's not a very good game.
Right.
Chinese is a lot easier to put together, and I can play it at night too when my wife is at work, so it's a little easier for my schedule.
But, so you just play it all night? I mean,
how many
hours did you guys play?
I think we started at 7, and I think we wrapped up around 11.
Oh wow! Well,
so only 4 or 5.
Yeah, it's still a lot.
They played it how they wanted to, but some of these people have real jobs. It's so sad. So they get home and sleep, but no, it's an addictive game. I mean, I was telling them, you know, after the cruise we got off and we played, not me myself, but our staff that came and stayed with me afterwards, they started playing like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and we played all the way to 5 a.m. So,
wow,
you know, 16 hours straight for the most part of playing. That's just, I mean, it's just that addictive. So,
oh my, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I never would have done that.
I know you wouldn't.
I couldn't even do like stuff I love that long. They're like open-faced Chinese. Jeez.
Oh, but open-faced Chinese pineapple is a love.
Yeah, it's a love.
Well, the other thing I love, too, is Steven Seagal movies.
I got to tell you, this guy, how did he fall so far?
Fall so far? He's always been a bottom feeder. I mean,
no, when he Hard to Kill was awesome. That movie made a ton of money.
Don't get me wrong. I'm a huge Steven Seagal fan. I watched that Fire Down Below. All of his crap I still like, right? obviously, Under Siege and Under Siege 2, which I actually watched the other day. Not in high def, which is kind of really... I can't watch anything not in high def.
Yeah, it's hard to watch.
But anyhow, that was on. So, I mean, those are classics. So don't get me wrong. But, you know, outside of the Under Siege and Hard to Kill, the rest of them really were B-list movies, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. But it just, he was so in demand when Hard to Kill came out and how amazing he was with his karate and all that.
Well, Milli Vanilli was in demand at one point, too. Doesn't mean that they're always going to be in demand, right?
So the key then must have been Kelly LeBrock. When they broke up, she was his magic.
Yeah, it's like Tom Arnold and Roseanne. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah,
but anyhow, so Steven Seagal is back. And we were talking before the show. We don't know what's worse, that there's a new poker movie coming out, or the fact that it's coming out September 1st and we're just hearing about it on August 22nd. Right? But anyhow, it's called Gutshot Street. It's supposedly going to be debuting September 1st. Good luck finding it. If you do, let us know. But Steven Seagal is one of the stars. Now, he's not the top billed star, but he's in it. Kind of like in Executive Decision, you know, where, hey, Steven Seagal, and then the guy's like blown up like in the first 5 minutes of the movie. You're like, hey, give me back my $8.
That's right.
I don't want to watch Kurt Russell the rest of this movie. but yeah, he's going to be in this movie. He's a supporting character. And of course, you know, they're not going for cliches at all in this movie. So he's a loan shark named Polly Trunks.
Trunks.
And apparently he owns a large piece of the main character, who is, of course, a down-and-out poker player played by George Eads, I guess it is. He was Nick Stokes on CSI. I never watched CSI or any of the other 47 CSI Sarasotas or whatever they had out there. So it's a new movie coming out, and it's written by a guy who I think his writing credits are all like YouTube videos. So, I mean, this is kind of a big deal for these folks, for this movie to come out, and... of course, we'll go watch it, right? Because...
Well, if we can find it.
Yeah, it can't be worse than Runner Runner, right? And that's the last poker movie that's in my consciousness, and I definitely need a palate cleanser, right? I'm almost feeling like I'm watching Big Blind again just to get Runner Runner out of my mind.
Well, I do know who George Eads is, at least, because I did watch a little CSI, but I was hoping it was the other guy, the Warwick... Because he had a poker problem. He had a poker problem on CSI.
Oh, really?
It would have been kind of cool to like sort of extend that, you know. But
worlds colliding,
Yeah, it ended up not being that. But I did know who Nick Stokes was on CSI, even though I didn't really watch that show. But I think my stepson was into it, and I watched a couple episodes when he was visiting or something, and it was okay. But yeah, I wasn't a CSI guy either. But Steven Seagal, come on, man. Go back to being a deputy or whatever.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's obviously this movie has some credibility problems already. Right. There's no way Steven Seagal has ever been called Polly in his life, or Polly Trunks, right? I don't care how desperate I become. You know, you cheat me out of my half of the company, you take everything I own, right?
Yeah.
If I need to get a loan, I am not getting a loan from Steven Seagal. there's got to be someplace better to get my money from, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's a badass, right? I mean, he's the king of B-movies. And, you know, he gets knocked off a train. Did you see a body? No. Well, you need to see a body. It's Steven Seagal. You know, he's just hanging under the train. He's going to come up and kill y'all.
Y'all.
You know, I'm just not going to take money from this guy because he's going to kill me, y'all. You know? So we'll have to see how it comes out. But I like the fact that the title's Gut Shot Straight.
Yeah, you're going to get blown away by a gun into the gut. And the other thing, too, is like you said, the fact that it's debuting September 1st and we never heard of it 2 weeks out. There's no credibility in there. Well, where's your marketing budget, man? You're relying on us to tell your marketing budget? Nobody listens to our show.
Everybody's watching the independent movies now. No one wants to see the blockbusters anymore. So.
Oh, yeah, no one. Yeah, they're only making a billion for everyone.
This is an IFC classic.
Insta-classic.
So I'm sure I'm going to have to go to like AMC Veterans 24, and it's going to be on the 24th screen, you know, with the 7 seats and no popcorn allowed.
And no, it's out in the parking lot. You got to sit on the hood of your car.
A little projector out there.
A little projector, exactly, like the one you used to have. Well, while I was gone, I got a quick email from our good friend Joe Navarro. You know his book, 200 Tells, the one that we advertise in the magazine? Well, it's now going to be an audio book.
Oh, awesome.
And you can purchase it. So I'll put that link on the site for him. I'm very happy for him because, audio books are – people love that stuff, man. They love to – especially on the commute. They listen to us and they listen to audio books. So why not take advantage of that audience, you know? So good for him.
And I think, I don't want to be too braggy here, but I think we kind of laid the groundwork for Joe here. Because if there wasn't the Andia podcast, there wouldn't be podcast players, and people wouldn't be used to downloading stuff and listening to it on their devices, right?
That's right.
So we opened this whole audiobook thing up, even the fact that you and I have never read a book in our lives. So I'm really going to take a little bit of credit here for the 200
Tells. Yeah, plus we had him in the studio a couple of times, and, you know, he got used to talking into a mic because of us. I mean, you know, I think he owes us a little percentage of that, I think. But
but in all seriousness, I remember reading this 200 Tells on an airplane when it first came out, and he sent me a copy of it. Really, really good stuff, obviously. I mean, I don't think Joe Navarro's done bad stuff ever in his life. So
yeah,
I'd be kind of curious, I guess, on the audio version of it. I'm looking at the book now on my shelf, and I don't remember there being pictures in it, but that's kind of tough on audio, right? To kind of show the touching of the face and things like that. I guess you can imagine it. But
yeah, and the other thing, too, is he's so animated. You know, I could totally, if he's doing the reading of the book, that you could hear him talking about it and just saying, you know, watch for this and look for that. You know, when you see somebody do this, that kind of thing, so... It should be a good listen. So,
everybody... Well, when I come out with my 201 Tells book, I'm going to have Steven Seagal do the
All right. Each week, we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something fantastic. It's Nick from Lincoln. We were joking before the show. We should call it the Nick from Lincoln Spotlight. He plays a lot, this guy. And so he says, here's a unique situation from a tournament in Las Vegas. He had just re-entered and was placed on the button. He said he tossed in his ante, and the dealer says he can't come in and has to wait a hand. The ante is returned, and now he's busy checking his work emails, waiting for his hand. And didn't realize the dealer had dealt him in, and he shouldn't have. So it folds around to Nick. And he says, I'm on the button with ace-deuce. Not sure what the proper thing to do is. I just decide to muck. The small blind raises, and the hand is quickly over when the big blind folds. Nobody says anything. Should I have spoken up? One reason I gave myself for saying nothing was the last thing I want to do as a new guy at the table is draw attention. Also, if small blind or big blind had a hand and I killed the hand by speaking up, they may hold that against me later. I would like to know what the correct action should be in case I find myself in a similar situation in the future. What would the result have been had I said something? Does the answer to that question change if there had been significant action, betting, and or raising before it got to me? Would I be the only player in the world who could fold ace-ace here and tell the dealer they made a mistake?
Yeah, I guess technically this could have been a call to the floor, but it almost seems more of a player responsibility question to me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I thought we discussed it on the spotlight instead. I imagine if we sent this to Sam, I think the technical answer would have been, if you're dealt in, you have a hand, whether you should have been or not. I mean, this came up with when you're on a penalty and they deal you in and there's significant action, you're allowed to play the hand out. So that would be my guess without, you know, I don't want to say for sure, but I would imagine you could play it. Now, whether the right thing is to play it or not because of that, I think he's right. I think the right thing to do is not to play it. It's unfortunate that he looked at it first.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot easier just to say, hey, whoa, dealer, I wasn't supposed to have a hand and push him aside and have him take it. I don't think you're calling attention to yourself. I certainly get his reason there for doing that. Obviously, he looked at it. You know, it's ace deuce. I mean, I think that makes the decision even easier. You know, obviously you're in the button, so it's a playable hand, but it's not a hand that you're upset throwing away, right, either. So I think that's just it. I think just avoid the thing. I just say, hey, I wasn't supposed to have a hand. And then really at that point, I would probably let the dealer handle it. You know, that's their job, right? It's to call the floor over, and the floor will give you a, you know, ruling. If he says you're allowed to play the hand, then I think you have a duty to play the hand the way you would. And if he said that the hand's dead, then boom. You weren't supposed to get that hand anyhow. So,
well, here's the one problem that no one's really addressed yet, was that the ante is not in the middle now.
Ah, very good point, yes.
You can't play that hand without your ante being in the middle, and now you get the choice of whether or not you want to throw an ante in because it's playable, and then keep your ante if it's not. That's not right. You need to fold that hand.
Well, yeah, I think, well, again, I think that would be part of the floor call.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying from me
right,
and you
but
thinking
I think if the floor decide that your hand is live, then I think, obviously, they're going to collect your ante regardless, and then you're going to fold it. So that would be unfortunate for you to have to put in a 100 chips when you weren't supposed to. But again, let's see, I'm not throwing this back on Nick, but, you know, he's checking work emails, not paying attention.
Yeah.
Cards, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not that you should pay attention if you're not supposed to get a hand, but... you know, at the end of the day, it's personal responsibility, too. So if you ended up costing him 100 by not paying attention to pick up a hand and then was later killed. But again, I don't think it would really be killed. I think they'd let it play and then collect the 100. And at that point, if it's folded around him, they used to, then I'm probably going to raise, right?
Yeah, right.
but he's right. You know, you don't want to come in there and cause a big stink right away either. So tough decision to be in. But, you know, because here's the other thing, too. I wonder... and really, now the more I think about it, probably should have been called for. Let's say if you did what he did, right? You looked at the hand and decided, "Hey, I'm not gonna be a jerk. I'm not gonna play. I'm gonna fold," and not make any. And no one say anything about it. No one's gonna know it. No one's the wiser, right? But what if somebody after you fold say, "Hey, he wasn't supposed to be dealt into that hand. He didn't ante. Now you're almost a criminal, aren't you?"
I don't know. I mean, you didn't do anything wrong. You didn't.
Well, you didn't do anything wrong, but you didn't tell anybody that you shouldn't have had a hand and you folded, right? Or worse, if you actually played it and didn't put the ante in, I think that's a problem. So, I mean, again, I think it's one of these things where I think the best thing to do, regardless of what the outcome is just to say, "Whoa, hey, I'm sorry. I just realized I shouldn't have looked at this card. I shouldn't have this hand. Please call the floor and tell me what I should do."
Yeah.
And let the floor make the decision in that way. And not that you're not the bad guy, because, you know, people are ridiculous like that, but at least you have somebody else that's the bad guy instead of you, right?
Yeah, how does the guy who's the actual button not say something, too? Like, I didn't say, "Hey, wait a minute, I'm the button," because this guy gets
so hand. Some people don't pay attention. And, yeah. You know, I left out this particular for this tournament. This is a $200 buy-in tournament, too, which is, you know,
tough
to sneeze at.
Yeah,
I don't
not true.
So I would think those people would pay attention as well, too. But yeah, that's a good point. A lot of people are not paying attention. A lot of people sleep at the wheel in the sand.
Jeez. All right, well, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been. Email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we'll have Annie Up Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. And ask about the Anti-Up logo version and use code Anti-Up for free shipping. This comes from Ed. He says, "I was recently in a hold'em tournament when I was heads up out of position with another player. After the river, I made a large bet. The other player intentionally showed an ace before calling with the winning hand. I asked for the floor, who let the hand stand and gave the player a one-hand penalty. I was surprised the hand wasn't automatically ruled dead. It's my understanding that in World Series and World Poker Tour events, the hand would have been ruled dead, but TDA only gives a penalty. This seems crazy to me. Imagine a similar situation in the early rounds of a deep stack tournament where the levels are long and the blinds are minuscule relative to the size of the pot. There's almost no incentive for the player last to act not to show his cards to try to get a read from the all-in player, since the penalty would be trivial relative to potential information gained. Should the player have been given at least one round penalty instead of just one hand? What do you think of this rule in general?"
Sam says, "The old school kill the hand mentality is a thing of the past. The best hand should always win the pot. A one-hand penalty was sufficient in this instance. I usually give the table warning, but if it was completely accidental. If his actions continue, of course, the penalties will be more severe, but the hand will never be killed. Poker players need to realize you cannot win a hand based upon a technicality, that you actually need to have the best hand at showdown.
Wait, he's been saying that a lot to people. People keep trying to win on technicality. He keeps saying, stop trying to win on technicality.
Yeah, win with the card, baby.
Yes.
Well, this was a very interesting call for him, because Ed and I went back and forth on this probably 20 times.
Jeez.
And he made some really good points. And we were going back and forth when I was actually at the World Championship. So I was hanging out with Matt Savage, you know, probably the preeminent tournament director. And I asked him about this, too, and he confirmed the same thing. One, he's like, you know, there are a couple rooms that were still killing hands in this, but almost no one does. So just no one's killing the hands anymore. But he also admits, I mean, what Ed's big issue is, and it's very interesting, is that if you know, I mean, it's almost like, I don't know if you watch Amazing Race, I know you're a Survivor fan, but the one with Boston Rob when he was actually in Amazing Race, I mean, it took a penalty at one point because the penalty was less painful than actually doing the challenge.
Yeah.
And it ended up working in their favor. And that's the same thing that Ed's saying here, is like, hey, if we're at the 25-50 level and I just have to sit out one hand and I'm not even in the blinds, big deal, right?
Yeah.
What am I missing out on that? But if I got an all-in and I can show a card and get a read that's going to decide whether I win a lot of chips or lose a lot of chips, that's the penalty I'm worth taking, right?
Yeah.
And he makes a perfect point, and even Matt agreed, and he's like, you know what, to be honest, I'm surprised that more people don't do this because of that. Now, the flip side is what both Sam and Matt said, is that the reason for the rule is to protect you when you accidentally expose your hand. It's not to punish you when you do it on purpose. And accidentally exposing your hand happens far more often than exposing it on purpose. So it's one of these rules where it's designed to protect you. And because it's designed to protect you, people are legally allowed to angle shoot with it if they really want to. And that's a tough thing for Ed to get past, and I get it. And I'm sure there's probably a lot of our listeners that probably agree with Ed as well, too. You know, you can't make a rule that protects you when you accidentally expose your cards and also punishes people for doing it purposely, because then you get into the whole, was it accidental or not, right?
Yeah.
And we all know poker players are good actors, so that what you're trying to do with tournament directors is avoid any of that kind of, you know, he said, she said kind of decision making, and do what actually the best ruling based on what actually you can prove happened.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the case here. And it is unfortunate that people take advantage of it. But I also said, I mean, I don't think this happens often. I really don't see this happening often when I play. In fact, I can't even tell you the last time I saw somebody actually...
Yeah, not in a tournament.
You know, expose their hand, knowing that they're going to get a penalty and not caring. So what I told them is, if this is happening a lot where you play, you probably want to play somewhere else, because you're playing with folks that are probably doing worse things in the game, right? And also, you know, as Sam said, I mean, this is not a one-hand penalty every time. If this joker does this 20 hands in a row, believe me, it's not going to be a one-hand penalty the 20th time. You know, it's probably not even going to get to the 20th time.
Right.
You know, it's going to be a one-round penalty, and then it's going to be something more severe than that. So there are rules in place to kind of minimize it being abused to excess, but obviously it is a legal angle shoot. And, you know, if you're the type of player that wants to take advantage of it, you want to be that kind of player, that's the kind of player you want to be. But I don't think most of us want to be that kind of player.
I agree. Man, you had a lot to say about that.
Well, I went back and forth 20 emails with him. So.
You're all emo on me.
Yeah. But, I like it when our listeners challenge us back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, I'll write back to folks and they're like, all right, I didn't see it that way. Thanks, God. And they almost kind of trust us just because of who we are, which is ridiculous because people should know that we don't really know what we're talking about, right? But then every once in a while I'll get somebody like, yeah, it says, all right, I get your point, but what about my point? And then we go back and forth. At the end of the day, I think both Ed and I are smarter because of that back and forth. And we probably still don't really completely agree with each other.
Yeah, I wouldn't say you were smart. I would say you got a little more information in
smarter.
Your head.
But smart, I said smarter.
I don't think you're smarter. I think you have more information in your head. Smart is an actual thing that you have to be, so I don't think you improved on that. But, all right. Hey, you know what? Malcolm O'Malley is back. Let's hear part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're sitting 2-5 no-limit hold'em, and we're about even with 492. The table's been pretty solid so far. A lot of steals and a lot of raise and take it situations. It's a full nine-handed table, and we've been playing for 3 hours. The blinds post, and it's folded around to the MP, who makes a standard raise to $20. This player is pretty solid as well. We've seen him make good calls and what we can assume were good folds, but for the most part, he hasn't shown down a ton of hands. He sits with about 1,200. He also bought in for 500 and has been here just 15 minutes less than we have. Up to this point, we've tried to avoid him. We're in the cutoff, and we look down at the Queen of Spades, Queen of Diamonds. This is a good hand pre-flop, and one we don't want to play timidly. We want to find out where he's at, get heads up, and see what the flop brings. We raise the bet to $50. The action is folded back around to the MP, who thinks for a short time before calling the bet. With about $100 in the pot, the flop comes the 7 of Diamonds, 4 of Spades, Deuce of Spades. This is a pretty safe flop, and fortunately we have position. Our opponent once again thinks for a short time before counting out a neat $60 and placing it into the pot. So we have an overpair. Are we beat? And if not, what are we going to do?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antifmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes Store. And this comes from Robin Manser in Canada.
Am I supposed to react to that?
No, I was just catching my breath. But you're welcome to go on a rant about Canada if you like.
I don't rant. You're the one that rants about Canada. I love Canada. Rant.
I love Canada.
Yeah.
I love the Canadians.
You love making fun of Canada.
Well, no. I like poking good-natured fun at them because they have a society that does things a lot better than ours, I think.
I would have to agree with that.
Yeah. And I'm envious. That's what it is.
You're just taking advantage of the fact despite that you know that there's no crime up there, so they won't do anything to you.
Hey, I ran 20 flashing green lights in a row. No one pulled me over.
That's what I'm saying.
Jeez. All right, anyhow. So this is, I think this is going to be more into the situation thing, if I remember it correctly, but it could be wrong. Okay. Anyhow, he starts off by saying, great podcast. Big fan of yours.
Yes.
Hey, we're a big fan of yours too, Robin. So he was playing in the Seneca Niagara Sunday night $100 tournament. Nice room. Always like playing when I'm up there. Mm-hmm. 47 runners in the tournament, top 5 get paid. And, it looks like they decided to take 100 out of first place to pay the bubble $100.
Okay.
And, he said, interesting side note. I know you like when I or our readers get off topic, but I think this is interesting. He had suggested taking the 100, actually paying the bubble, because he's a Canadian and he's subject to a 30% withholding at Seneca Niagara, which he has to file to get back.
So, for $100?
Well, no, that's what he said. The $100 cash would not be subject.
Oh yeah, okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know now he's getting he's free rolling a little bit. All right. So anyhow, he says I sat to the right of the villain previously in the tournament, and he was reading a poker strategy book on his tablet. He was a regular mention to one of the others that he was now using a poker coach. He also mentioned that he played the $1,100 buy-in at Turning Stone earlier in the week. Jeez. He said, I did mention to him a few podcasts that could be helpful. Us Canadians are so nice. Hopefully you were nice enough not to mention ours to him. And I made the point not to mention that I played the World Series of Poker this year and that I also played in one of the deep stakes played in Hollywood. We were playing five-handed, and the villain was on my right. I'd been playing tight aggressive at the table, and before the bubble burst, I 3-bet the villain when I was below average in chips, and he had the chip lead by a fair margin. My ace-10 suited. Oh, terrible hand. Flopped a 10 and held his ace-king off. Never happens to me! This brought the villain and I closer to the chips, and now we're to the hand in question. Five-handed at the 1,500, 3,000, 200 ante level.
Okay.
The button, he's going to give us the chip stakes because it ends up being kind of important here. The button has 5 big blinds. He's a middle-aged regular who knows the villain and has been playing loose aggressive. Small blind is 11 big blinds, senior citizen that knows everybody at the table but me. The big blind is 13 big blinds, also senior citizen who knows the small blind. The villain has 48 big blinds. He's a late 20s guy with a ball cap and headphones. Reading a tablet except from the bubble onwards. At showdown, he had shown strong hands. And we have 38 big blinds. And he says, I play here about once every 3 months. I recognize some of the regulars in the room, but don't know everybody at the table. When the villain is at the table, I showed a strong play of top hand, and he showed a three-barrel bluff. And so here's the situation. Obviously, the villain's a chip lead of 48 big blinds. We're pretty close after 38 big blinds. Everybody else is really short stacked. Okay. That's the take now. All right.
Okay. Good.
Villain open shoves all in for 48 big blinds pre-flop under the gun. And I have the ace, king of diamonds. What do we do in this situation?
I'm Chris Cosenza. That's the end of the show. You got to fold. Why? I mean, why get involved with this guy when you got such short stackery behind you? I mean, these guys, you're playing in a five-handed tournament, or five-handed left. You know, the big money's always on top. You're only 10 big blinds away from this guy who is crazy for shoving. He's probably doing it with just some, you know, middling pair or even ace-king like us. You know what I mean? Why? There's no reason to race here. I'm not going to flip, you know, for 38 big blinds when I've got these short stacks around. And, you know, I mean, it's an easy decision. I mean, I hate it. I've actually been in this situation before, even playing cash games where, you know, you got a raise, a re-raise, a shove, and a call, and I look down at ace, king of diamonds. I'm like, I can't win anything here. What's the point of calling? Now, this isn't the same scenario, but what's the point of calling when you got three other people who could go out in the very next hand? Five big blinds. I mean, 11 big blinds. These people are going out soon. Or, you know, whatever. I mean, there's just no way. There's no situation here. You have to fold that hand. It's a drawing hand. I don't care what Mark says. You know?
I agree. So I'm Scott Long. We'll see you at the tables.
All right, see you at the tables. That was easy.
No, but the reason I like to put it on the show is because he actually said that his friend, he ends up folding. So I should say that. He did what we did. But some of his friends were saying that this he had to make this call because you're in the tournament to win. So I want to talk about that. He's got some other points too that we can talk about too. But yeah, let's look at the price pool here. So first place is $13.57. Second is $10.03. Obviously the bubble's already burst. So fifth place is $2.42. All right. So if we call and we're out here, we win $242. If we don't and we end up winning this thing, we got $13.57 on top, or at least $10.03 in second, right? So that's kind of the discussion here, and I get this. I get this all the time. People keep telling me, Scott, you got to play more aggressive. You got to play to win, not to cash. And I think this is a situation where I think you and I would be surprised at how many people would have made this call. Using the rationale, I need to win.
Yeah.
I have ace-king of diamonds here. If I win this, I'm going to be massive chip leader, and I'm going to crush this tournament.
Yeah.
And I think the fault in that, as you pointed out, is that we've got three super short stacks that we're probably going to be able to knock out in the next round or two. And our hand, admittedly, is a drawing hand. At this point, if I had to guess, I see somebody open shoving like this, because this play is pretty weird too, isn't it?
Yeah, why do that?
Right, because he's got us behind him, right? I mean, he's not scared about anybody else calling him, but he's got to be scared of us, right?
Right.
So the fact that he's shoving that much, he wants to make it to the point that we have to have just a monster to call, right?
Right.
And so if you're doing that, what do you have? Probably a middle pocket pair, probably, like eights, nines, tens, maybe sevens.
Yeah,
I mean, you're not doing that. But you're not doing this with ace jack or something like that, right?
Right.
And you're surely not doing this with aces or kings or some hand that you want to get some value out of, right?
Right.
So if you know that, and I just guess that you know that. I mean, I'm fairly confident that's what he has. And now it's a coin flip for us, right? And slightly better coin flip because we have the diamonds. But do we really want to try to go from $242 to $13.57 on a coin flip?
No. There's no way. That's it right there. See, right now, you're in second place. The amount of money that you're losing to gain an advantage on this guy, it's just the equity is not there. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of 2006 World Series main event final table, Paul Wasika. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Jamie has like 4-3 off. Paul has 7-8 of spades, and Michael Binger raises with the Cosenza, ace-10 of hearts. They both call. Flop comes 10 of clubs, 6 of spades, 5 of spades. And he's got an open-ended straight flush draw. So Paul checks it. Binger bets and gold shoves with his bottom ignorant end of the straight and has both of them covered. So Paul is like, if I fold and Binger calls, I'm heads up for the title and I jump up a bunch of money and I can win the whole thing. But if I call, because I've got half the deck twice, you know, I'm going to be the massive chip leader now and I can take on this Jamie guy myself. But if I lose, I lose out on all this money, and I think I can still beat this Jamie guy who's really an unknown. So he folds. And I remember at the time I was thinking, how do you fold there? But then the more I thought about it, you know what I mean? It was $12 million for first, $6 million for second, and like $4 million for third. It's another $2 million. And when you're a struggling poker player, $2 million, that's huge. So, okay, we're not dealing with those types of amounts here, but to get rid of a chance at $1,000 for $200 over a race that you have to improve on, you feel like in your heart you have to improve on this ace king, and if you don't, right, you're out. To me, it's a no-brainer to me at this point. I mean, it'd be one thing if you were, you know, you didn't trust this guy or he was shorter than you and you want to take a chance to end it. You have ace king of diamonds, you're calling every time and twice on Sunday. But when it's
sure, yeah,
I'm behind and there's three other people still in the tournament who are short, Why take the chance? For what? You want to win. That's right. That's not a good decision to win. Okay, so you'll get a bunch of chips if you do win, but it's not about that. It's about making the right decision, not about taking a chance and gambling to win. That's not the right thing to do.
Absolutely. I mean, if I'm one of these other three people and have ace king of diamonds, absolutely I'm calling you. 13 big blinds, sure.
Absolutely.
You know, but I've got so much more equity in this tournament by just folding here and letting, I mean, I'm hoping some of these other guys call and have what we have and get knocked out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then I just moved up, 242 to 352 without doing anything other than make a good fold.
Yep.
And closer to getting to the 1357. You know, the other thing I keep telling people, when it gets down to the five-handed at these final tables, I mean, this is a sit-and-go at this point in my mind. Mm-hmm. And I think you got to play chip stacks, not poker. And so I'm looking at these chip stacks, and I know that these three people are pretty desperate. Now, you know, I'll be an ageist here and say two senior citizens are probably going to be pretty tight. They're probably going to blind themselves out before they make a move. Could be wrong. They could be crazy senior citizens, but generally speaking.
Right.
And the other one is a loose aggressive with five big blinds. I mean, what is she going to do with five big blinds? You know, so it could take a while, a couple of rounds around, but these players are not going to be – they're going to have to be very – they're going to get very lucky to get back into this thing. And if they get very lucky and not against you, what's the problem there either? You know, if one of them doubles through the villain, now the villain is less than you. You're the chip leader now, right?
Yep.
So it really doesn't matter what happens at this point. You need to be the aggressor, not the caller, every single hand the rest of this tournament. And the fact that in the situation of calling is just terrible, I think.
That's a huge point, too, that you have short stacks behind you still to act to this shove. They might look at it and say, this is my one chance to double through. And if they don't, and if they win, now you're the chip leader, unless it's the five big blind person who calls. So, I mean, you could literally fold your way to third place money here.
Easily.
Because inevitably, two of the other two are going to get eliminated because they're not going to keep sticking around while you're folding 38 big blinds. It's just not going to happen. So, to make this call would just be, to me, it would be in haste. And I would never want to do something like that. I'd want to just, you know what, hey, you want to be an idiot and shove for 48 big blinds under the gun when you got four people behind you to act? You know, keep doing it, because then I'm going to wake up with king-king or ace-king or a queen-queen or something, and then I'm going to make a call, and then I'm going to be the massive chip leader. But to just say, oh, you want to win the tournament, Scott, you have to get all these chips. Well, that's true, but you don't want to be an idiot about it either and cost yourself the tournament. You know.
Well, I think you made a couple more good points there. I mean, if we come in this, the likelihood of one, two, or three of these other players coming in as well, too, is heightened. Because at that point, now, what these people want is not to double up. They want to triple up.
Yeah, right.
Particularly the five big blind person. And, you know, they're going to come in with all kinds of stuff. I mean, I went out one of the tournaments at Thunder Valley in the same similar situation. I was fairly short stacked. There was a shove, an all-in, a call. It got to me. I had 9-6 of hearts. I'm putting that in right there. And it's not because I think my 9-6 of hearts is good, because it's terrible. But there's so many chips in the pot now that if I get lucky, hit my flush, a straight, or even one pair might do it.
Yeah,
I've quadrupled off. I'd much rather do that than open shove and pick up the blinds. And so at this point, you know, when you've got all this money in here, I'm going to have a really crappy hand for one of these other ones to not take a shot. I mean, obviously now they could also be hoping that, that you're going to get knocked out and they're going to move up a spot like that. But they got to think that you've got a pretty strong hand to make this call, right?
Right.
So I'm not too worried about that. And, you know, the other thing, too, is you're right. When you get out of the three-handed, this is the thing you got to think about sit-and-go strategy as well, too, is that you don't need to be the one taking people out. If you end up heads up and you're down 5-1 at chips, you're still in that thing.
Yep.
So you know, you don't have to take out the villain now. Let him do all make him do all the risk here, take these other players out. You know, if he takes everybody else out, what is he going to get? He's going to get 24, 29 more big blinds. He's already got to fight 10. So he'd have 37 big blinds to our 38 big blinds. One double up and we're...
Right.
We're right back in this thing, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, take your chance at that point.
Yep. I never think of it as that I have to... Why always get heads up? Look at Brian Rast and Phil Hellmuth. 18-1 chip lead, and Phil Hellmuth lost. Yep. You know, you're never out. And to me, just when you're already almost secured third without even doing anything, and you're probably going to go heads up with this person if you play your cards right, why take a chance now? You know, it's just no reason to take a chance now. So what happened?
All right, well, he says, I ended up folding after deciding I didn't want to flip for my life. Very good play, I think.
Yes, yes.
So he was in first position. I put him on a pocket pair, jacks or better, or ace-king offsuit or suited, to flip and get fifth or win and have a great chance at winning. I figured he would only do this with a strong hand as a short stack of blinds could easily call. If he lost, he would lose the chip lead and that he would have had at the start of the final table. If he's on my left, I think I would make this move with a wider range. so he wants to know if it was the right move. So I've been working on my game as I can cash in tournaments, but I found a top three finish hard to achieve. So I kind of get this. This is what, again, people tell me. Hey, Scott, you got to play to win, not to cash. But, again, I think you got to be smart about it, as we said. He says, I'm a weekend online warrior who plays live tournaments in the States whenever time permits. I've played online since 2005. I listen to strategy podcast regularly and also read poker strategy books, working on my strategy when I have 12 to 18 big blinds. In the past, I've been too passive in this situation. I was waiting until I had about 8 big blinds before I was open shoving. Now I'm open shoving with any strong hand, 12 to 18 big blinds. I said I did this at the tournament. It was never called. And again, that's the difference here. Open shoving versus open calling.
Yeah, shoving is easy because you don't have to have it to shove. You have to have it to call. And
we're in great position against this guy. Right?
Yeah, right. We get the rest of the tournament. You're behind them. Just
if he folds, we can shove all kinds of hands and pick up the blinds.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I would shove any strong hand with 12 to 18 big blinds. That doesn't sound right to me. But I'm not gonna get into another whole thing here.
Well, I think that's what people are starting to do. It used to be 10 big blinds. Used to be the old.
Yeah, but 18. That's almost now, double that. That's,
well, yeah. Now it's almost.
I'm comfortable
20.
With 18. Some
pros are telling you to shove with 20 at that.
Jeez.
Point. Well, at that point, it really makes somebody have to have a hand to call you. I mean, you're not going to want to do that from under the gun. You're going to wait, you know, want to do it on the button, cut off.
Right, right.
You know, once most of the danger's out of the way and take a chance then. But yeah, because at this point, 10 big blinds is almost not enough to get anybody out anymore. So, I mean, the world's changed a little bit.
But, yeah, but 20 is a lot too, but I don't know.
He goes on to say, I'm 50 years old and look like an ex-cop who still likes donuts. I do try to use my appearance to my advantage, as I think most young players expect a certain play from us older guys. Absolutely. Villain did show 8-8 after everyone folded, and I told him I had ace-king suited. Hmm. I think me telling him my hand was a big mistake. I don't think so, actually. So he wants to know, what about his move with 8-8? I think it was a big mistake, as he was first to act, and any hand that would call would be a flip at best.
Yeah, I hate that move. I mean, I hate shoving with 8-8 because not shoving, because any two cards you're racing for your blinds rather than
right.
What's
but
the point?
You got to look at the chip stacks, though. I mean, he's taking a calculated gamble that we don't have a hand. We're going to have a monster, like I said, to call, because we're not going to call off 38 big blinds unless we have a monster. I mean, as we prove, we're able to fold ace king suited against that, right?
Right.
So he's fairly confident, I'm not fairly, strongly confident he can get past us. After he gets past us, who cares if any of these other people call? I mean, we got a made hand with eights, and these guys could call with anything because they're desperate, and the chances are they're probably going to fold, and we're going to pick up the blinds. And if one of them calls, we can't get hurt too badly. I mean, the biggest one's a big blind, 13 big blinds. If we call and he ends up pipping us, we're down to 35 big blinds. We're really pretty much even with our hero here. I mean, what would you rather do? Do the normal little 2.5, 3x and get involved and lure us into the hand where we don't know when to play? I mean, I really want to shut the hero out of this hand and not have to worry about him with 8-8.
Yeah, it's just scary to think that this guy could, you know, I mean, he was close to calling with ace-king. If he had called with ace-king and the guy had eliminated, we would say he was an idiot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, but I mean, you can't think that.
I would have said more about the hero play, but I don't think a lot of players are going to make that call. I really don't.
Yeah.
And if they do, worst case scenario, we get knocked out. We got 10 big blinds. We're still fourth in chips at that point. You know, I'm not excited about 10 big blinds, but I really think the risk of getting called by that guy right after us is mitigated to the point where I'm willing to make that move. Not saying I'm always going to do that, but I see some genius in this guy's play with that.
I can't remember. Did Robin say that playing tight? Or had that have that image at the table, a tight player?
Who, the villain?
No, it was Robin have the image of being tight. I can't remember.
Let's see. It said, oh, boy.
Because nobody knows how he plays because he doesn't know these people. But did he have the image of being tight?
Yeah, I mean, he said he suggested some strategy stuff to the guy. He didn't tell him that he played bigger things. So he probably knows that. I would say probably the villain probably assumes that he's smart enough to fold the kind of hand that he did.
Okay. Yeah, then I guess the 8-8, as long as he thought that this guy was capable of folding, if the villain thought Robin was capable of folding, then I don't really care about the 8-8 shove. It's just, to me, I look at it like, you know, all you have to do is have that one time where he wakes up a king-queen and thinks it's good enough, or thinks that he's just making that move, because now if you're thinking on another level, you're thinking that that's what the villain's doing. He's doing it with any two cards that could be paired, and maybe I am going to race for him, or maybe I've got him dominated.
I think you're getting a lot of credit there. I don't think anybody's going to do that with any two cards. I mean, we're already talking about how borderline it is in 8-8, right?
So. Well, any two made, you know, any two.
And let me ask you this. If somebody calls with king-queen, are you upset?
No,
I mean, I don't want to get called
probably
by there by anybody, right? I mean, I'm making the move, so I just pick up the blinds and not. But, you know, the king-queen's got a catch. You know, I know we like to call it a coin flip, but it's still slightly in our favor.
Oh, the other thing I don't agree with was when he said because he was in first position, you put him on pocket pair of jack-jacks or better. It's only five-handed.
Yeah.
You have to go way down in your hands.
At that point, I think you're right. I think any of those hands above, he's going to want to play.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think you kind of do this. That's why I heard shove. I mean, why would somebody shove 48 big blinds there? And I'm like, that's when you immediately start thinking it's a vulnerable hand that he doesn't want to play post-flop.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to play 8-8 post-flop, right?
Right.
You never want to play post-flop. Because the chances are there's always going to be one or two or maybe three overcards on the board. You're only going to hit your set one of every, you know, rare times. And then you're not going to know what to do with it at that point, right?
Right.
So if you can avoid that whole post-flop or flop play and pick up the blinds here, absolutely.
All right. Well, you know, I didn't think that was going to be as long as it was. Once you know, I thought the show was over 15 minutes ago. But,
that's what I said. These things are, I mean, the situations sometimes are more elaborate than the hand. So, anyhow, if you ended up wanting to know, the villain knocked out the other three players, or who ended up heads up to him, down chips 4-1, and shove with 8-9 suited, two hands in, got called with king-jack, and the villain spiked the jack. Mm.
See, but still, again, it's a good fold. It shows that you make him, you finish second.
Finish second, and 4-1 is really not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Really not. I mean, had that hand gone the other way,
yep,
it's a whole different tournament.
All right, Robin, thanks for the hand, and thanks for listening from Canada, despite Scott's disdain for the country.
What? I love the Canadians!
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables. Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.